Welcome to episode 14 of the Oxfordshire Teacher Training Podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to be sitting down this afternoon with Tom Sherrington. And those of you who are sort of involved in Oxfordshire Teacher Training will know Tom's work very, very well. But particularly this afternoon, we're going to be thinking about the Teaching Walkthroughs book. Tom, welcome. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
No, it's a pleasure. And I'm delighted to be here talking about walkthroughs and teaching in general. So thanks for inviting me.
So I suppose I'd like to start off, Tom, if that's okay, about why you felt it was time to produce this particular book.
I think it's just one of those things where ideas develop and then they come together. So it wasn't like some giant master plan, but Oliver Caviglioli, who does the illustrations, just have been working in parallel on a number of other book projects. And then really, he had the idea that some kind of record of all the ideas that are being shared that was in a sort of simple form might be useful, because he recognized that the Rosenshine booklet that I made last year with some of his input had sold really well, and because it was so short. So I had this idea that short is good, and we're getting lots of positive feedback about that. And so he was saying that maybe we could just go a bit further than that and break down various ideas into short sections to make it easy. And then that's what people seem to want. They want to be able to get into ideas quickly. And then, so I can describe it in more detail, but it was this idea that his illustrations and my writing might work well together in a more extended way. And then when we sat down to plan it out, it all came together. But it wasn't really about a particular time or anything. It was just, you know, brainstorming ideas, and we just thought we'd see how it went.
Really interested to know how that collaboration works. Is it a case of that you're bouncing ideas off each other, or whether one of you comes up with an idea first, or how does it all fit together?
We recognise each other's sort of contribution, and you know, for example, we're in the middle of developing walkthroughs as a whole package at the moment, with volume two we're under, and so we have established a process. But it started off by us. I have to remember that Oliver, although he's an illustrator in this project, he used to be a head teacher of a special school, and both of us have done training in schools. So we both understand what it's like to train teachers, work with teachers, observe lessons, that kind of stuff. So we sat down to talk about what the content would be together as an idea, and we listed things. And once we'd agreed the list of things to do, basically I took the list and started breaking it down into the five steps. So I would say, so how do I do questioning in this way in five steps? How do I do quizzing in five steps? And so there's a structure. And then the book is written on a spreadsheet. So he can see it, same as me, like through Google Docs.
Yeah.
So I'd say I finished these, and then he would look at them and say, okay, then he would do the illustrations. And then I would see the illustrations, and then a couple of times I would say, I'm not quite sure what that's for. Or so we would just back and forward. But mainly I did the writing and he did the illustrations. But sometimes he would write them.
Right.
I didn't do any of the illustrations. That would be great if I could, you know, like do what he can do, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
But that's essentially the process. So it's absolutely brilliant. So we did it a few, you know, in chunks of a few at a time, and accelerated towards the end as we were getting close to finishing.
Yeah, fantastic. So you split the book into different sections, and one of the sections that you have is you call the why section. And in that why section, you've talked about a number of books and principles and techniques. I'm interested just to know how you felt these were the ones that you wanted in the first walkthroughs book.
Well, they started off by being the ones that I refer to the most when I do training. So when I go into a school and I do training, which I do a lot, and obviously there's been a bit of a pause with there because of the lockdown. But at the time of writing the book, I was thinking, well, what do I need to tell people about? Well, Rosenshine is obviously one that is covers a lot of bases. But there's also a couple of papers, the Marge paper by Arthur Shimomura, I find really, really useful to explore this idea of what generative learning means and generate, evaluate. So I find that really, really helpful. So I wanted to include that. Dan Willingham is probably talk about cognitive science and memory. You need a person to go to give you the lowdown on that. Well, he is the person. So why don't students like school is included? And then Dylan Williams, similarly, the idea about formative assessment. So I just felt these are key ideas. And I think we've also included Ron Berger's An Ethic of Excellence, because, you know, it's a slightly different type of thinking, and that applies to things like redrafting and things to do with writing. So we could have done more, but then we, early on, when we started writing our list, we realized we had more than 50. So right from the very beginning, we conceived the idea that there would be three volumes, and we talked quite a lot about whether they would be sort of hierarchical or do one set of ideas and then another and another. And we realized, we thought, no, what we'll do is each volume will be, have a selection of all six themes of ideas, like behavior, curriculum, and so on. And in a way, they'd stand on their own, but they'd be stronger as a whole set. And so right from the beginning, we knew that if we couldn't fit it into volume one, we'd put it in volume two. So we've already drafted out the full list of things to go in volume two and some for volume three. And there's just so many. Yeah. So I think in the fullness of time, so when people have all three books, it won't really matter which one is in which book. It'll just be...
It'll be the whole altogether.
So, but we have to start with some. So that's what we did.
Fair enough. So I think what we'll do now then is we'll start to have a look at some of the particular sections that you've put together in first of the walkthrough books, which is the one on behaviour and relationships. As regular listeners to this podcast will know, that our real focus for this is for initial teacher training. And in particular, we're interested in the role that the mentor has and anyone working as an experienced teacher to support trainee teachers as they start their learning within schools or continue their learning, because of course they're not really starting, they're coming in with something at this stage. At the very beginning of any teacher training year, we find that our trainees, our associate teachers, will say that the thing they're most concerned about, their biggest worry is, how am I going to deal with effective behaviour and relationships with the students that I'm going to be teaching? How might they use the behaviour and relationships section of the book to help to support and challenge everybody through their training year?
Well, I think that the way that all walkthroughs work for in that coaching kind of situation is that you sit down with the person and you open it up and you use it as a framework for a discussion. So that's the whole point. It's not really a set of rules.
Yeah.
Some of them are more general. So the first one in there is positive relationships. So obviously that's not something you just do as an action. It's a concept. So how do I engender positive relationships? And we have set out five things. So the first one says establish norms around clear roles and boundaries. So there's a lot to unpack in that, obviously. But it's just that general idea. So you could then say, well, you know, how have you done that so far? You know, are you doing that? So for each point, you're just saying, how's it going? Is it something you're struggling with? And then it's like a prompt. Communicate kindness. Or what does that mean? You know, is it an issue of the teacher being too sort of shouty and austere or whatever? And maybe it is or not. Learning names. I mean, some people have said for some people that feels a bit basic, but I've found over the years that even quite experienced teachers can sometimes cut a corner of knowing names, and they start saying things like, hey guys, you over there, you know, and you can tell they don't really know the students who are causing difficulty, and they're a bit wary of them. And if you can't call them by their name, it really disempowers you. So something as basic as that is like, well, make sure you do, and how have you done that, and have you got a seating plan? And it also helps you with questioning, all kinds of stuff. And then combine assertiveness with warmth. This is a great thing to sort of get people thinking. It's not a choice, it's about balance. So how do I show warmth? Well, there's a kind of eye contact and friendly smiliness, but there's also a kind of, no, sorry, that's not okay, and a firmness. And it's talking that, so it's a framework for discussing that balance between being friendly and warm and kind and firm and assertive and definite. And this idea of always being the adult. So you might have people who are struggling with being triggered by students. I found myself as a young teacher, behavior management incredibly emotionally, it's just so difficult, you know, to students would say things and I'd flinch and react. And you think, no, you've got to not do that. And it's not, you have to learn not to and learn to distance yourself and all those sorts of things. So that's just one example in positive relationships. Each one of those five things is a discussion point. Some of the others are more things you enact. So signal, pause, insist is one of our very behavioral ones. It's very precise. It's just do it exactly in this order. And that is a technique which for me is a winner. It's, you know, does everyone know the signal for attention? Is it a raised hand, a 3-2-1, whatever it is, you know, clapped hands, whatever it is, the signal. And then the pause, this is the key, the making sure people have heard it, know it's happened, and then the insistence, that kind of, no, I'm not moving on until you're with me, and that insistence of absolute attention, which is what you're asked for. And then in the walkthrough, it talks about make sure you know what the signal is, teach it to the students, and then practice giving it, practice the pause. And the insistence is the hard bit, that waiting, that firm, assertive waiting that everybody's with you. So we think that's so if you were there with a coach, you'd be looking at that saying, well, how's that going? You know, do you get a crisp response when you give the signal? Or why not? Okay, so what's happening? Is it your pause is too short, or you're not making eye contact with those guys at the back, so they don't really think you mean it when you're insisting? All those sorts of details would come out through the discussion. So that's what we're hoping it does. It gives people this framework for, do we know what we mean? And I can keep going on, but essentially those are that's the type of discussion we have, and you do it with the book open in front of you as a reference point, to remind you the sorts of things you should be discussing.
Brilliant. That's really, really helpful. Obviously those people who are working with Oxfordshire Teacher Training, hopefully you've all got your copies of the book by now. If you haven't, make sure you get in touch with us and we can sort that out with you. Now, there's a second section in the walkthrough books, which is all about curriculum planning. Now, in the world of early career frameworks and ITT core contents and the new Ofsted framework, obviously curriculum's got this sort of raised profile again, quite rightly, I think, and that kind of interplay between curriculum and pedagogy. So I'm interested to know really kind of how you felt you wanted to put together this section. Obviously, you know, you've mentioned before that, you know, there's more to come in volume 2 and 3, but particularly thinking about, you know, why you felt these were the ones that you wanted to put in the first book.
One of the things that's sort of up for discussion at the moment is what is a knowledge-rich curriculum. It's sort of picking up on the sorts of debates people are having through Twitter and through blogs and various, you know, research shed events and so on. So we thought it was important to have a kind of vocabulary for discussing curriculum, which everyone understands. And really the curriculum section is not so much about go and do these things necessarily. It's also about just, do we know what we mean when we say knowledge-rich curriculum? Do you know what I mean when I say coherent mapping? Now, what does coherent mean? What does it mean if I say something like the core and the hinterland? You know, what is that? So it's like they're definitions of terms. So there's a couple of things in there to do with like concepts. Some of them are to do with things like practical things like planning for reading. And we just think that if there's as a set of ideas to consider, pitch it up as about the standard. And what we are assuming, and then there's a key one, which is from the beginning of the Rosenstrand's principles, which is sequence concepts and small steps. So that's a very sort of practical thing about when you've got your curriculum mapped out, you know, have you planned it out in the detail of conceptual sort of steps, which then allow you to build secure schema with students. So that's, they're a mixture of broad concepts and sort of practical things to do. Like reading is a practical thing to do, sequencing the concepts is. But for a beginning teacher, the key thing is to blend this idea, this sort of teaching all the small bits, but knowing a bit more about what else is to come. So my experience has been with working with NQTs that sometimes they can be far too focused on the minutiae of the detail they're about to teach and not have really looked beyond that. And then that does lead to people making mistakes, like trying to squeeze way too many ideas into one lesson. And because they don't have the confidence that it comes up later. So they just and don't really know what when it comes up, because they haven't had space to think it. So I really think it's important to sit back and look this coherent mapping. To now, you might have designed that curriculum because you've come in and the curriculum is kind of set in terms of schemes of work and resources, but you still need to look at it and say, okay, where is this whole thing going? Where does this particular unit fit into a wider scheme? So it's interesting from a beginner teacher point of view. Some of the things like blend knowledge and experience are hopefully things which are planned into the curriculum that you have been asked to teach. But it's things to be aware of, like the idea that to make sure you give value to them. So that and to think in terms of your pedagogy and your understanding of your subject. Are there things that students can only really learn by doing them? By experiencing them, that you can't just be told about them? And what other things are the opposite, where you have to just explain it, you have to lay it out and tell them and instruct them, because that's the only way they're going to know? It's like some of this received knowledge and you have to pass it on. And so knowing very clearly, this is something you need to do and feel and experience, and this is something I need to tell you about, are quite different. And knowing really clearly in your mind, in your curriculum, these are the different types of knowledge I'm trying to give you, is really helpful and helps you teach it better. So hopefully, like a lot of these things, you know, a beginner teacher, there's so many things to learn about, but this is a helpful sort of framework for thinking about that as you're going into the process.
Yeah, brilliant. That's really, really helpful. Now, the next section, which is all about explaining and modelling. So at the time that we're recording this, we've had a number of our associate teachers have already started on their summer programmes. And one of the things that really came out when we were using the section on explaining and modelling and thinking about this was people sort of starting to get the understanding about how children learn and how we can enable them to develop knowledge and understanding to apply to a range of situations. And I think one of the things that certainly came through with the initial bit of training that we were doing with associate teachers was that for many of them, they hadn't really thought about how pupils learn really at all, because they thought about, you know, how do I teach, but they hadn't kind of flipped it around to think about it from the child's point of view. And you got some absolutely some essential things included in this section here. But just wonder perhaps if we just look at maybe one or two of them in a little bit more detail. I wonder whether there are particular ones within this section that you think, yeah, these are ones that were straight in the list that you were going to use on your spreadsheet that you were sharing with Ollie when you were putting it all together.
Let's have a think. I would say something like deliberate vocabulary development is something which is universal. So it's amazing to me when I observe lessons, how easy it is for a teacher to think they have taught everyone a word, only for me to be there sort of in amongst the students to realize that actually the students around me haven't really picked it up at all, because they haven't all been asked to practice using the word. So the teacher might feel, I've explained it, they've written it down, I've said it many times, and I've got a couple of students that have given me good answers using that word. Doesn't mean that Johnny in the corner knows now how to say erosion. You know, he just doesn't, because he's never said it. He's never had to ask a question using the word. He's just in a room where other people are using the word. So, and that's not the same. So, a bit like when you're learning a language, everyone understands that you have to practice saying the words. Everyone does. You can't just have some people doing it. But it's the same with any language. So deliberate vocabulary development is all about making sure every single student is using the vocabulary you want them to have. And that's very actionable. So you do it chorally, you get them doing it in pairs, and so on. You make sure that the words are in the text they're going to read. So if you want them to understand the words, you provide text with the words in them and you do reading and so on. And you're very deliberate about it. And that does mean you then have to have a sort of target set of words you want everyone to learn, because you can't sort of deliberately do, you know, in an unlimited number of words. You've got a sort of set vocabulary you need people to teach, and that's part of the curriculum. So it's that certainty that everybody is learning it. So this is one of my mantras that I refer to many times in my training, is it's quite easy to teach some children something. it's actually the hard bit is making everybody learn all of it. And that includes any new terminology. So that's one as a start. The other thing is about schema building, is to be very deliberate about it. So if I've got, say, I don't know, it depends, we can do different examples of subjects, but let's say, you know, a historical event, you know, you can start big or small. It doesn't matter which way you begin. But if I'm starting about, say, you know, what this event happened, it could be, I don't know, Anne Boleyn being beheaded or something. And you start focusing, you talk about the trauma of that. And imagine that, someone, you know, the Queen's beheaded. Extraordinary, isn't it? How could that have happened? And kids don't know anything about it, but you're focusing on the small, because it creates a bit of focus. But then you say, so what's that all about? And you zoom right back out and say, okay, so where are we in history? What's going on? And then Anne Boleyn being beheaded is this moment in a big frame. And a big frame is just the collection of lots of small details. But you have to have them both. So you think, okay, what's the big picture? It could be, I don't know, in science, you know, a particular phenomenon, a particular material. This is a material. Let's discuss this. But why are we interested in this material? Because it's part of the pattern of many materials. Let's have a look at the pattern, and then let's go small. So this idea of zooming in and out multiple times in a teaching sequence really helps everybody know what the big picture is of what we're trying to learn about, as well as focus on some details so that we're gradually piecing this whole thing together. And to me, that's what that is. And it's very practical, but if you don't think in that way, yeah, you're not teaching lots of disconnected bits of knowledge. The students have no idea why or where it's going. Or it's also broad brush. They don't really learn any specifics. Probably all of them I could explain in more detail. The abstract models with concrete examples is a really, really important one. So if I'm talking about alliteration, I need straight off the bat an example of alliteration to give, and so do the students. And then when you're checking their knowledge, you should be saying, okay, what does alliteration mean, and can you give me an example of it? Like, these are hand in hand, and that's true with science expressions, concepts, geography, the general example and the specific case. Like, let's link these all up, and that's how we form rich schema for things. So that's an important thing to get ready. What are your examples? What are your examples that you're going to use? Plan them in advance so you're ready.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, as you say, we could talk through all of them.
Yeah.
Of course, is the challenge in a way with a book like this is that, you know, every single one of these you've chosen very carefully to think about and think, actually, do you know what, this is really important. Let's have a close think about this. And it kind of adds in really with the big challenge for anyone who's learning to be a teacher is there's so much to learn. And what's absolutely brilliant about this book, and certainly it's sort of our understanding about how people within our partnership are beginning to use this, is thinking, actually, this is not just for anybody. This is for all teachers, not yeah, just at the very beginning of their stage. You know, and even now, you know, I've been teaching fair number of decades now, and I look through and think, yeah, do you know what? That's exactly something I do it without thinking about it, but actually, if I'm more intentional about the way I'm thinking about this, this is going to be so much more effective in my own teaching to think through.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
That's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Okay, thank you ever so much then.
All right, cheers then.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So this has actually ended up being, by some way, the longest episode of our podcast that we've ever recorded. So long, in fact, that we've decided to split it into two sections. So you'll need to wait until slightly later in the season to hear Tom talking about the second half of the Walkthroughs book. But we hope you've enjoyed this one and enjoy reading through and making great use of this fantastic resource. See you again soon.